Welcome back, everybody, to the fifth episode of the Tiger View podcast. And this is a special episode. We're doing it on Easter. So happy Easter Sunday to everybody out there. And just hope everybody had a great Easter Sunday, however you celebrate that. And Dawson, this is going to be a very great episode, man. We've got so much to talk on. And I didn't even realize some of this stuff happened until it did. And it's just flashed before my eyes. So I just was writing out the outline and I just kept going and going. But I can't wait to unleash it out and spill it here on the fifth episode. So yeah. So
Yeah, I'm excited.
go ahead, my fault.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, we do have a lot of information to cover. I mean, a lot of stuff's happening. We had the baseball series, had softball series against Boston College. We had a lot of news going around college football. You know, it's Easter. That's another great thing. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's gonna be a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, so I'm going over the breakdown of the episode real quick. Obviously, we always like to cover the baseball series and the softball series first, and then we'll go into a little bit more updates on the basketball transfers on both sides with the men's and women's, and then also some unexpected news out of the gymnastics program came out this weekend. And then Dawson's going to talk about a conversation he had with one of the Clemson football players, and then more updates on the Nico Emelianova situation and some other college football news. And then Dawson actually attended the South Carolina spring game, so he'll jump into that. And then other things we got lined up is Gordon Sellers. His recruiting is kind of closing down, and then just a regular upcoming week schedule, and then a little shout out at the end. So as always, we're going to go into the baseball series recap just to go over the scores real quick. Game one, Clemson will win 6-7 or 7-6. And then game two, 2-1, and then in yesterday's game, they would lose 8-6 in extra innings that ended in 12 innings. So there's so much like to cover with baseball. I was telling you before we started recording, so I'm gonna let you go first, and then I'll kind of come back and do what I got to say, because I mean there's a bunch to say. So I'm gonna let you go ahead and go first with that.
Yeah, I mean it's another series victory. You know, we get to chalk it down on the win column there, but you know, just having to replace a Saturday starter this deep into the year, that's just such a big blow. And I mean, I love the way Drew Titsworth came out and pitched Saturday or Friday night, excuse me. You know, he phenomenal, I thought. Really good outing by him. I mean, he goes 6 innings, 3 hits, 0 runs and 3 Ks. I mean, that's just what you want to see out of him. I mean, 6 innings, that's a great, you know, for him. And you know, even let's you could look at Friday. Aiden Knott, you know, got off to had a little bit of issues early, but was very efficient after the early innings, and you know, really had a good outing. You know, 7 Ks on there. You know, he gave up a couple of runs, but we got the win. You know, guys were hitting well, and you know, very similar story Saturday. You know, we grab another quick win there. Malstead picks up his 14th save, and then you know we roll into Sunday, and you
Saturday.
are rolling to Saturday.
I
Yeah,
know, it's messed me up
this
with them
whole
not
weekend
playing regular
thrown
weekend
off.
schedule.
Exactly. You know, we throw Chance Fitzgerald out there, who actually, you know, I don't mind throwing him in that situation. I spoke to Jason Priester with the Clemson Insider, and you know, he kind of had the same thoughts that say, hey, you know, with a 2-0 series lead, you know, Bakich probably wants to put some guys' feet to the fire a little bit, see what they have in these kind of, you know, high leverage situations. And I actually think he did pretty well. You know, he looked a little shaky at start, you know, had a little trouble in the first inning, but got out of it. And then, you know, kind of how what we expected, BJ Bailey comes in and just great job by him. You know, he you know, hats around, you know, the pitching staff on Saturday. You know, they did all they could, but look, we just couldn't hit the ball at all. I mean, we could not give ourselves any help. And I don't know how you felt about it or what you saw, but to me, I just felt like we were letting our pitching down.
Yeah, man, for sure. I mean, we're high. The highest ranking right now we have is in perfect game, and we're ranked number two. But like, I don't know. With us being really knowledgeable about baseball, it really doesn't feel like we're the number two team in the country. Our highest ranking number two. Like, I just feel like there's so much left for this team that they need to do. And I mean, pitching's been the one thing, and then the bats have been kind of iffy as of late. But I want to shout out Jack Crichton. He had his first career home run on Thursday night. I was there. Covering, and yeah, he had his first career home run, and it was to put Clemson up in the game over Louisville after that gritty win on Thursday. So yeah, but I remember the text me, you, and Charles had on on Friday about Drew Titsworth pitching whenever you're saying that Titsworth was pitching, and I was like, I actually like that. You know, it's always good to be able to just test something out and see if it'll hit, and it definitely did. I mean, he did pretty solid. He's usually one that comes out the pen, but that was his first career start on the mound. So I really think he did a good job there. And then going into Saturday's game, Chance Fitzgerald starting out pitching, another situation where you're kind of just testing something out. Like you said, we've already won the series, so just testing it out with him, and he pitches a couple innings. But BJ Bailey comes in, and he's back to his regular fashion. He pitched 6 innings, and I mean, he was just doing what he usually does, and it's good to see that coming out of him after that last start he had too.
Yeah, he was really good. I put out a tweet, I believe, that Sunday, and I was like, the entire Clemson hitting, should go over there and apologize to BJ Bailey today. I mean, he went 7 innings, allowed, you look at the 3 earned runs, and they were timely earned runs. I will say that they were timely, but overall, if you give up 3 earned runs in a game, especially as a bullpen reliever, who he classified, he was a bullpen reliever. You expect to win the game. We had so many opportunities that game with runners in scoring position. We just could not score. I think the biggest part that concerned me, and it's not necessarily a lack of talent at all, it was a lack of concentration from Jacob Durrell late in that game with Jaren Purifoy sitting on third with one out, with a huge chance to score a run there. And Jacob Durrell just freezes at the plate. He does. He Bakich made it seem like he got the sign and he knew what he was supposed to do, but he just froze at the plate. He couldn't get the bunt down. I mean, that just can't happen at all. It just cannot.
Yeah, for sure. And besides that, Jarrell also picked up his 10th home run, and he's the first Tiger to hit double-digit home runs on the season. Also, like you said, picks up his 14th save, which he keeps adding to that nation high in saves. And then also as well, just the problems with the hitting on base. I mean, whenever there's people on base, man, you got to get them in. You got to do a job, whether it's a sac fly or I mean, a base hit out the middle, you got to do a job because those runners are important. And I mean, once you're getting deeper and deeper into the game, those runs are really coming to play. And yeah, I just mean, they got to do a better job of doing that. And I mean, I'm hoping they will. And I mean, I feel like they will. But yeah, it's definitely one of the big problems they got to pick up if they want to keep on going deeper into this season.
Quick question. If without the stats being in front of you, how many times do you think we struck out on Saturday afternoon?
Well, I really didn't watch the game on Saturday, but just looking from what I saw, I'd say about 7 or 8 times, maybe. I
And
mean, I'm just free guessing.
how many hits do you think we had?
I would say like maybe 4 or 5.
Okay. We struck out 11 times, had 10 hits. The final score ended up being, 6-8. So if you look at the hit total, in baseball, and most coaches will tell you this, especially at, college, it should be at college level, and it definitely should be at high school level, that normally the score of the game is about half of your hits. So if you get 10 hits, you can expect to score between 5 or 6. We did patch on a couple more here. We had 6 runs in the game off 10 hits. So statistically, that's about right there. But the big problem is we cannot strike out 11 times. I don't care how long the game went on. We struck out too much. Cam Cannarella had 2 strikeouts. Jacob Drill, 3 strikeouts. Josh Pano, double digit strikeouts. There were a lot of chances that we left out there, and a lot of it was with runners on. I mentioned Josh Pano striking out twice. I got to compliment him. Bottom of the ninth comes up big. Oh, that might have been the 10th. Was it the ninth? I believe it was the ninth, right?
It was the ninth, yeah. I went back and
Yeah.
watched the highlights. It was the ninth, pretty
Yeah,
sure.
he puts us on the board there, puts the team on his back a little bit, extends the game. But look, I mean, with success, there's criticism. And that criticism is we're striking out too much, and we're not moving runners over with runners in score position. That's not a winning recipe.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, it's just the little tweaks too. If we can tweak the little things, then I mean, we can be unstoppable as a team. But I mean, we keep getting deeper and deeper into the season, and I mean, The regular season's almost a couple weeks out to being closed, and I mean, the postseason's here, and the road to Omaha is going to start soon. So I mean, we got to get those figured out. But we have a test on Tuesday night as Georgia comes into town and plays Clemson at Doug Kingsmore Stadium. It'll be a top five matchup, and I heard you say today that Talon Bell will be getting the start for that. So just that's a big test for that guy. But I know from what I've seen so far that he's really down for that matchup on Tuesday night.
Yeah, that's to my best knowledge and prediction, it'll be Talon Bell. Obviously we haven't, totally confirmed it, but from everything that I can hear in my sources is we're gonna see Talon Bell, which is no shocker right now. I wouldn't have been surprised to hear Ethan Darden's name thrown out for the weekday start. And you might ask, why this and that, but I think a weekday might actually be a good spot for him. Now, not this weekday. Tuesday, you're playing a really good team in Georgia. Maybe not this weekday, but if we were having these problems 3 or 4 weeks ago, and you had a chance to throw him against a little bit of a weaker team, let him build some confidence. Ethan Darden pitches best when the defense is playing really well behind him. If you go back to that South Carolina game, he had a lot. He had issues early. Runners on with no outs in that first inning, and they got out of it. Ground balls, double plays all day, and he had a very efficient outing. When he is at his best, the defense is working behind him, guys are smooth, and he's getting his ball down in the zone where guys can't get up on it. And that's really what's been struggling with him in ACC conference play is, he's not been able to land his spots. The defense is kind of not giving him any help, that's just unfortunately something he's got to get over. So if we saw him in a midweek, maybe we're probably going to end up seeing him come out of the pen for some time in the weekend rotation, which I wouldn't mind actually. He could come behind a guy, and he's a little bit, slower of an arm, but he's going to get ground balls. His goal is to get cheap outs. So I would like to see him pitch in a reliever spot, or maybe we see him in a midweek game.
Yeah, I'm definitely rooting for Ethan because I really do like the way he pitches, but I just hate to see him struggle. I mean, as I don't like to see anybody else not do good, but definitely rooting for Ethan, and I'm hoping to see him back out there. But another thing I want to point out that I didn't put on the outline is I might have the hottest hoodie on in town right now, and I kind of I know Dawson was the one that asked Coach Backage about it a month or so back, but they started selling the orange hoodies in the Palmetto Sea, and I tweeted a picture of it the other night, and man, it blew up. I mean, it got so many likes and reposts, and even a couple people commented on it. But and I thought it was funny too. I actually had the T-shirt in the purple that they just started selling online, and I went to the post game press conference on Thursday night, and Backage was like, "They're selling those now?" And I was like, "Yes, sir, they are." And he just gave a little laugh, but I guess he didn't know that they were selling yet. But I love that they're finally selling merchandise with the Palmetto Sea logo on it because it's a dang sure good logo, and I really like it, and I know you really like it too, along with everybody else as well.
Yeah, I posted it on Facebook and a bunch of people were talking about it, but one question I kept getting asked is, where's the purple one? That's what people want to see is where's the purple one? So, maybe that might be have to something I talked to Coach Eric Backich about Tuesday. When are we going to get the purple one?
Yeah, I mean the orange is nice, but I mean nothing beats that purple one. Like
I
they
like
be
the
wearing,
orange.
yeah,
I
I do
like the
too.
orange personally.
Yeah, but definitely get to Doug Kingsmore Stadium if you want the hoodie because I'm not sure if they're selling it online yet. But yeah, so moving along now from baseball, we're gonna go into softball. Softball had another great week. Tuesday night they played South Carolina, a top 25 matchup at McWhorter Stadium. And they ended up winning 2-1 from a walk-off home run from Marion Collins. She was the player to put two runs across the plate with bombs, basically in the same exact spot right there in left field. But just an amazing performance altogether. And also Brooke McCubbin coming out the pen and doing what she does. But yeah, I was there on Tuesday night, and that was a good game. I ain't gonna lie, I thought we were gonna kind of lose that one, but it was a very tight game. And they go into the seventh, and Marion Collins hits that bomb to tie the game up, and then we go into extras, and then she comes back up and does the same thing and walks us off. So it's always good to just get that win over the Gamecocks whenever we play them in softball or any other sport. But yeah, and then also this past weekend. They played Boston College at home for their final home ACC slate of the year, winning 6-2 in game one, 8-4 in game two, and then yesterday in game three they ended up losing 5-2. But another series win for John Rittman and his crew.
I sat down and watched the Tuesday night game after I got off work. And I mean, man, it was exciting. Early on, it felt like, not a lot was going our way, really. It felt like USC was kind of having all the good luck. And, like you said, big, big moment for Collins, a freshman. That's a big spot in a rivalry game. Walk it off. Just great, great job all around from them. And McCubbin, like you said, just coming out, giving great bullpen innings. I mean, it was just perfect. We definitely didn't want to get swept by the Gamecocks this year in softball. That wasn't going to be something we were going to allow happen. So just great job for the girls to get that done.
No doubt. That also boosts their resume. I've been seeing multiple sources saying that we may be able to host a regional, which I know they'll be glad to be able to do that. And hopefully we can get a regional in baseball and softball hosting. Just have a bunch of people in Tigertown once the summer starts to come around. But also this weekend as well, some Tigers also broke some records or tied single season records. Julia Noller, she's now at 14 home runs, which is the second most by a sophomore in program history. And then Abby Vieira, she's at 15 doubles on the season. Maddie Moore, 57 RBIs on the season. She's been swinging a hot bat. And of course, Alex Brown, 59 runs scored this season. So I mean, they're putting up big numbers, and I know they're getting hot at the right time as the season starts to come to a, or the regular season starts to come to an end, and postseason play starts to ramp up right there in ACC play, and then also into the tournament. Also, another thing I want to announce is Charles and I, we're going to be doing a Zoom interview with the Clemson commit. Her name's Sarah Breaux, tomorrow evening around 7 o'clock or so. So me and him are going to be doing a Zoom interview with her. She's out of Florida, so I can't wait to be able to sit down and talk with her. So we're going to post a video in here, and yeah, just be on the lookout for that. And I know Charles is excited, and I'm excited as well, just to be able to catch up with a Clemson commit that you'll be able to see play in Mink Water here within the next year or so. All right, now moving along to men and women's basketball. We both each got a new transfer for the men's and women's. So Coach Brownell, he's doing some more cooking, and he brought in Jake Wallen from Utah. He's a 6'10" forward, and this now makes it five transfers for Coach Brownell. And I knew he would hit the portal hard, and bringing Jake Wallen in is another great pickup for Coach Brownell.
Jake's the fifth acquisition for us in the portal. And, he's got good size. He's got good length. That's kind of been Brownell's forte in the portal this year is, big man. He scored, 6.3 points per game for the Utes and about five rebounds, played in 33 games. He'll have 2 years of eligibility remaining. So, maybe we can, start to build off of this. But, hey, we're still looking for some guards. We got a little bit of room. We did add, I believe Nick Davidson's younger brother, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So that might fill, that fills up another roster spot. Which, hey, I mean, if we got to add him to get his brother, hey, that's a great trade. We'll take that all day. He's a great player. Both of them are phenomenal men. But yeah, I mean, still another thing that we're probably looking for is I wouldn't mind adding another guard. We got Dylan Hunter back there in the backcourt, but. I'd like another ball handler, maybe more dominant, so Dylan Hunter can direct the offense and, do all the little things right and play great defense like he did this past year before breaking his hand, unfortunately. So we can have a guard, more of a ball dominant guard, like a Chase Hunter, like a Joe Girard, a guy like that who can come in and just, score.
Yeah, I have a feeling Brad's not done cooking yet. I mean, he's a portal demon, so I know he's definitely got some more up his sleeve. And also talking about on the Davidson brothers, I think it should end up pretty good. I think the last set of brothers we had on the team ended up pretty good. So it's always good to have that little family connection on the team as well, because you just got a different chemistry whenever you're playing alongside your brother. Also on the women's side, Coach Poppy, he's doing some cooking as well. He brings in Hadley Pierman from Tulsa. She's a 6'2" forward, so she's kind of going to be replacing Tessa Miller, who's moving on from this year. But and there's also possibly another transfer on the way. I'm not sure if anything's been released yet while we're shooting this podcast, but Coach Poppy might be giving us a little Easter egg on Easter. He he commented early this morning, just his little teaser tweet with the fire emojis and the tiger emoji, along with some of the assistants. So we're waiting to see what happens with that. But I know Coach Poppy, he's been hitting the portal hard too. But right now with the acquisition of Pyramid, we are also at five transfers on the women's side as well. So and Coach Poppy's cooking up some more as well. So I'm just excited to see what he's got up his sleeve too. So I know on the men and women's side of basketball, I think we're going to be looking pretty good here in the near future.
Yeah, I'm excited. This has never been a better time to be a Clemson basketball fan on both women's and men's side. I thought about even this year going in grabbing some season tickets. Now, Sean Poppy's making me buy in. We might have to.
Yeah, man, Coach Poppy's a great guy. I mean, he's real genuine, like I've said time and time again. But I really love what he's doing with the program, and he's just a great guy, and you can tell that he's got a real passion for it, especially with being here at Clemson as well. All right, now moving along, some unexpected news we had coming out on the gymnastics side. Coach Amy Smith has been relieved from her duties as the gymnastics coach. One thing that kind of shocked me, Charles was actually the one that told me the news, because I was doing some wedding stuff for my buddy this weekend. But he texted me and saying that Coach Smith had been fired, and I was just starstruck. I covered gymnastics the whole season, and I mean, she's always been, from what I could see, a pretty good lady as a coach. But what kind of shocked me is the athletic department released a very short statement, and usually whenever you see something along the lines of that, there's definitely more to the story. So just waiting to see what happened with that. But I do know one thing, is that Graham Neff's definitely going to do a great job of hiring a new coach. And I think we'll grab a good coach. I'm not sure who it'll be yet, but just based off what we have over there in the gymnastics program, I mean, who would not want to come here and coach? We have a great facility, and then I mean, Little John Coliseum's definitely one of the best atmospheres in college gymnastics. So just waiting to hear about that, and just all the best to Coach Amy wherever she may end up after Clemson.
Yeah, and like to add on what you said about maybe there being a little bit more behind the scenes. A lot of people pointed to the fact that is when she was at UNC that she was fired for issues internally. And I would like to point out to a lot of Clemson fans that hey, Clemson knew that when they hired her. They knew about her past. I seriously doubt that she got fired because of something that happened at another school. And we do hate to speculate, but when there is a past there, you do have to, conjure up in your mind that, hey, maybe old habits returned. We'll never know unless, things do get released, and I'd be willing to bet they do. But yeah, like you said, I mean, I trust Graham with, however he takes the position in gymnastics. They got a great program down there, so.
Yeah, I mean, they already got a good group of girls on the team now, and they've been doing some good recruiting as well, which I'm waiting to see what'll happen with that, is if the new coach is going to bring a whole new coaching staff or what. But just waiting to hear the news back on that, and make sure you stay tuned, as Tigerview Media will definitely have the story on that. But moving along now, Dawson got to sit down with one of your Clemson football players, and I'm not going to say who. I'm gonna let Dawson say it, but I'm gonna let him lead, and just see what he's got to say.
Yeah, I do. I recently got to speak with a transfer, Tristan Smith, talk about his journey, talk about all the adjustments and what it really has been like being a Clemson Tiger this year. And so, he's just, first off, before we get into this, he's a great guy. I always enjoy talking to him. Real cordial, real smart man, very respectful. He's very respectful and very appreciative of everything. He told me that he's really enjoyed his transition. He's a lot closer to home, coming from LaGrange, Georgia, so his family's going to be able to come watch him play. That was a big deal to him in his recruitment. The facilities, the coaches, he says everyone is just so welcome here. And he recently went on Clemson for a little video, 7 or 8 minute video, and talked about the same thing of being that, hey, everybody here is so nice and welcoming. This does just feel like home to him. He loves Paul Journey. That's been a big hit and a lot of, I think is a really big impact with recruiting now, especially these transfers that are looking for futures. They're not just here to take pictures on a photo shoot like a lot of high school guys are. They want to know what the school can do for them. And so I asked him, surely that there are obstacles, and he was very open about that. He was, he's not a guy that's gonna hide and try to make things up. His biggest obstacle being just learning the playbook, learning terminology. He's been very open about that. He said him and TJ Moore, TJ Moore helps him a lot with that and learning different sides of the field. He broke it down to saying, he played on the left side his entire career at SEMO and at Hutchinson's. And now at Clemson, he's going to be playing at a different spot, maybe on the right side. And to all the people that don't play football out there and maybe not understand that, receivers have different positions, X, Y, Z, so and so and so and so, F. And each one of those positions is a little different with how you run your routes, timing, and just getting continuity with the quarterback. So, to him, that was a really big deal, was moving spots over. Maybe he played X at SEMO and now having to transition to another side of the ball where he's going to have to learn angles, he's going to have to learn timing, he's going to have to learn, what Cade likes in routes. But, so far to me, he's really done a good job in adjusting to that. And then I asked him, the question that a lot of people probably wanted to know was, what was it like coming into the receivers room that already seemed to have a lot of good continuity in it and having to be the new guy? And he told me flat out, he said, "Hey, look, I don't even feel like the new guy here. Everyone's been so welcoming. They've treated him like he's been here his entire career. Even before he got on campus, he was really good friends with, or he did have a relationship with TJ Moore. So, he's been hanging out with him a lot, and he's already got, handshakes and, with all the other receivers, as you saw that, when he scored his touchdown in the spring game, everyone was really excited about it. And so, that bond with everybody in that room that carries off the field brings so much chemistry on the field. Is there's so many examples of players to where their only relationship is when they're on the field together. Much like a Ronald Acuna and Freddie Freeman situation from a couple of years ago, where Ronald Acuna was very open to say, our only relationship is that we play baseball together. Clearly with Tristan, his relationship is rooted in much deeper things with this receiver group. And that's, a great thing for him. And then my biggest question I asked him, what should the world expect out of this team? He said the world's getting a championship out of this 2025 team. He said that we best believe that. So, all of the whole conversation and more is up on our page. You can go read it there if you want to. But yeah, I mean, I just really enjoyed talking to Tristan, especially, he's just a shining example of what a good transfer can look like.
Yeah, I've become a real big Tristan Smith fan. Whenever you're talking about the video, were you talking about the Beyond the Paul podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I listened to it on the way home, and I mean, just listening to him talk and just talking about his family life, and then the girls that are on there who host it. I mean, he was just being respectful to them, saying yes, ma'am. And I mean, they're basically the same age, and he's still showing respect to them. But I've really become a real big Tristan Smith fan. I mean, he's got talent on the football field, but just also you can tell he's been raised to the right standards. And I mean, no other better place for him to come than Clemson and just show off his talents. And I just love how appreciative he is. And I know he's a real big fan of our stuff, so we appreciate his support. But I'm just glad you were able to get a conversation in with him. And he's very blessed with the opportunity he's been given. And I was watching the vlog too, the spring game vlog they released, and he was vlogging during Tiger Walk, and he was just, you could just tell how appreciative he was, and he's just a real humble guy and just a guy you love to see playing for Clemson.
Yeah, we're glad we got him, definitely.
Definitely. So moving along now, we now have some more updates on Nico Emelayava. So it was officially announced before, a little bit before we started recording, but he's going to be a Bruin now. He's going to play for UCLA. So yeah, I'm gonna let you lead that, Dawson.
That was a big deal. A lot of people thought he was, North Carolina bound, Tar Heel bound. But from, according to our sources and what we're hearing is, North Carolina said, "Hey, thank you, but no thank you." And I do want to make something clear, for everyone that follows On3. On3, their source is the agent and the father of Nico. That is who their source is. So anytime that you see, North Carolina offers, North Carolina crystal ball 100%, which it really was popping up. Their source is the agent. Their source is not Bill Belichick. Their source is not the athletic director for North Carolina. Their source comes directly from Nico's camp. So it's so tough to just believe everything that you see out there. And appropriately, I didn't think he was going to North Carolina. First of all, I didn't think Bill Belichick was going to cave to that. And it seems like Nico and his team have been very tight on their negotiations. And so he comes out, takes a trip to the UCLA, and eventually now is officially UCLA has pretty much let their entire team know that they will be taking in Nico in for a much cheaper price. Might have that. He is getting paid, according to On3, around 1.7 million or so. So he's taking a huge pay loss here. He was getting paid over 2 million at Tennessee, and now he's losing money here at UCLA. He's playing for a worser team. UCLA has put in one quarterback, I believe, in the last 25 years in the league, and that quarterback was Josh Rosen. So we all know how that turned out. So I think this is a huge fumble. I could be totally wrong. He could light it up next year and go pro, but as of April the 20th, 2025, this is probably one of the biggest fumbles that we've seen in the NIL era.
Yeah, I mean, just a crazy story all in all from just him holding out at Tennessee and then just everybody trying to figure out where he was going, like you said, with North Carolina. And I also even seen some things about Tulane being in the mix for it, and then that ended up not panning out. But now he's going to UCLA, like you were saying, for a much cheaper price. And I just feel like, man, he really dug his own grave in this situation. Like you said, he's going to not as far of a talented team in UCLA like he had in Tennessee. And I mean, I don't know, man. It's crazy what we've come to. But I'm just glad the situation's over, but I mean, I feel like there's still more to come with possibly other players as well. And another thing I want to point out, another thing I've seen was Coach Fran Brown from Syracuse. We're big Fran Brown fans over here, but one of their wide receivers ended up hitting the portal because he wanted a little bit more money, and he was like, "Listen, I'm not paying $2 million for a wide receiver. Like, you might can do that in the pros, but I'm not gonna do that in college to pay you $2 million to play wide receiver for me. Like, you can go somewhere else with that." So I'm really liking how these coaches, along with how Josh Heupel acted in the Nico situation, just how the coaches are starting to put their foot down. And I mean, you love to see it because I mean, you would think that they would kind of bow down to them and give them what they want. But I mean, I just like that the coaches are kind of retaliating this situation and putting their foot down and just giving their authoritative figure over these players. Like, you're not going to outdo me. Like, I'm your coach. I mean, I just like that they're doing that now.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with, when revenue sh when rev sharing takes over, one guy's not going to be making $5 billion. I think some coaches are starting to kind of catch on to that. And like you just said, hats off to Fran Brown, sticking up for his program, understanding that no one's bigger than the team itself. Although he did say that two mil, that's Jeremiah Smith numbers. That's He would pay that if he had a chance to getting Travis Hunter back. But yeah, outside of that, I don't see a single wide receiver outside of Antonio Williams, Bryant Wesco, TJ Moore, Tristan Smith, Cole Turner, everyone on our list. I don't see anyone worth being paid that right now.
Yeah, I know. Just like I've said time and time again, crazy times in the college athletics landscape, especially in the football side of things. But now moving along to our next segment, TCU has accused Tennessee of kind of doing some tampering. So, I mean, that was something you drew to me, Dawson. So, I'm gonna let you inform us on that because I really haven't heard anything about it unless I'm just totally missing it. But, yeah, I'm gonna let you go on with that.
Yeah, the report came out the other day that Tennessee was being accused of tampering with Josh Hoover from TCU, trying to draw him out in the portal, offering him a pretty substantial amount of money. And of course, this is all accusations. So we can't sit here with concrete evidence and me saying this is what happened exactly. This is all just alleged. But tampering happens every year. It happens with every team. Georgia trying to pull Phil Mafah out of the portal a few years ago. Everyone knows it. Teams tampering with Cade, but it's about what you can prove. And can TCU prove any of this? I highly doubt it. I think this is more just a shot in the air. And We probably could have seen this coming. You know, Tennessee's losing a quarterback. They probably have a little extra money to play with for a quarterback. So now maybe they're getting a little desperate there. You know, so this isn't anything out of their nature. If you would have told me for sure that Tennessee did tamper with a quarterback to bring in out of the portal, I wouldn't have been surprised. You know, this is just the way things are now. You know, the modern day bag man is just a coach calling you when you're on a team trying to get you into the portal. So to me, I mean, this isn't anything like shocking breaking news. This is just TCU reporting what is already happening across every team in the Power Four.
Yeah, and Dabo's even touched on it, saying along the lines of not televising the spring game or not even holding a spring game, like in the light of tampering. He's like, tampering's gonna happen either way. So I mean, you really can't stop it unless the NCAA does some stuff about it. But it doesn't. I mean, it happens in football, but even aside from football, I've heard it happening in baseball as well. We've kind of had some of our guys tampered with. I mean, from Tennessee and also Florida. So that's just what I've heard. And I mean, it's just, like I said, another thing that has turned college athletics pretty crazy in these times.
Definitely.
All right. So moving along now, Dawson kind of did some scouting as he went to the South Carolina spring game on Saturday. So yeah, I'm going to let you go with that. I've seen some things about it, but since you were there, I'm gonna let you kind of dive deeper into it and just let us know what you seen out of the Gamecocks in their spring game at Willie B.
Yeah, you know, first of all, you know, they brought a pretty solid crowd. You know, I was actually, thoroughly surprised. But, they had a good crowd. It was lively. You know, it was not the same setup as Clemson. This was more of a traditional spring game. They did do a kicker competition. I think they pretty much settled it. One kicker, I think, went like 0 for 2. And the other kicker obviously made his field goals. So, they had that. And, as far as their game plan, it was a lot of RPOs, which is what we probably expected. A lot of short route RPOs. They're not really very trustworthy in their offensive line. Lenore Sellers talked about it that, he really was complimenting a lot of the quarterbacks and a lot of their plays, and people were complimenting Lenore Sellers and his ability to run. But I would question say, hey, this is a spring game, and you can't protect your quarterback at any stage. The only quarterback that I saw that had time to throw was Cutter Woods, the third string quarterback, who threw a beautiful deep bomb later and, ended up scoring a touchdown. But, that was one thing that I saw and has really plagued South Carolina fans for the last couple of years is their bad offensive line play. Starting in 2023, just, a big recent memory for me is North Carolina ate them alive up front, sacking Spencer Rattler all night. Even this past year, if it were not for Lenore Sellers and his ability to scramble and move, he would have gotten hit every single play. And just like Friday night, he's on the move. He's having to roll out, make plays. And number 44 for South Carolina on his team, it seemed like the receivers might have some growing to do. They have a lot of freshman receivers. Lenore's talked about it. He said that they had a lot of senior or they had a lot of upperclassmen there left. So they're gonna have to work on that. They brought in five receivers, with Donovan Murphy still coming along. So they're gonna have to get those wide receivers in sync with Lenoris. They're gonna have to be able to block up front, and their defense is gonna have to be a lot. I think it's gotta be. They gotta focus on their fundamentals. Dylan Stewart got a lot of pressure early, but outside of that, the tackling just didn't seem like it was up to par with what a lot of fans probably expected. Into going to the backup quarterbacks, from what I saw from Aaron Nolan, he looked like a backup quarterback. That's the best way I can put it. He had a bit of a weaker arm. He made a couple of bad decisions. Not to say that he was, terrible by any means, because he played okay, but to me is I understand why we didn't chase after him when he was in the portal. I've told people numerous times that, hey, this is a guy that Ohio State let off the hook for nothing. And, South Carolina was the only team who wanted to pay him that amount of money. So for one thing, I would tell South Carolina fans, and I tell a lot of them now that I talk to, is, hey, if Lenore ends up coming back next year, which I think he will, if he comes back next year, I don't see Aaron Nolan sticking around. I see him, jumping ship. I might even see Cutter Woods jumping ship. You might lose two quarterbacks in this next cycle, so you're gonna have to bring in some people. But outside of that, Jaden Sellers, one guy that looked pretty decent for he's a hometown guy from Florence. That's Lenore Sellers' younger brother. He's a twitchy athlete. He's quick. I think he needs to strengthen a little bit. He's pretty skinny. Not to say that you can't play at that weight, but maybe a little bump in weight would probably help him, especially playing the SEC. You got those big corners. But he looked like a really twitchy athlete. He was catching balls downfield, tracking them. So overall, I think if you're a South Carolina fan, you might come out of the game a little concerned about your offensive line, your wide receiver continuity, and a little bit of defensive fundamentals. But overall, you're okay. You're not terrible, but I don't think that they put on their best performance. Very low scoring. I believe it was 10 to 7. So, there was so much that I saw out there that, I ended up some people around me started noticing that I wasn't even really locked in on the game. I was, had my phone out taking notes the entire time, and they were asking me what I was doing. And I just told them I was Connor Stallings from Michigan. That's who I was. I was their spy. But yeah, it was an enjoyable experience. It was good to see what the Gamecocks had going for them.
Yeah, definitely some good insight. I was kind of thinking the likes of Connor Stallings with you being there, but I didn't want to say it, but I'll let you say it. But yeah, definitely good insights, and I know it's just spring ball, but definitely some things you like to hear as a Clemson fan coming out of spring ball for South Carolina down there in Columbia. So moving on now to one of our final segments is Gordon Sellers. He's coming home to Clemson, so he committed to the Tigers. He's the third four-star wide receiver to commit to Clemson, alongside Connor Salmon and also Naheem Burrows. And now the 2026 class sits at 14 commits right now, and they're the second overall class based off of 24/7 Sports, and then obviously first in the ACC. So just another cook by Tyler Grisham, and I have to say there's probably more to come alongside wide receivers in the 2026 class and beyond.
I sat down and watched a little bit of film of Gordon a couple of weeks ago, and I was really impressed of him as a pure fundamental player, ball player. I don't care a lot of the times what these guys are ranked because I don't think that matters as much. But what I saw from him is his first play on his 2024 highlights is a beautiful high point ball. He's coming back to it, catches it. He's quick. He gets out of screens early. He can run. He's smooth. He's got great hands. He tracks the ball really well. He's got good size, 6'3", 200 pounds. He's a little taller. He can move. Naheem Burrows, also another guy, really shifty. He stands at about 5'11". But what jumps out to me on film about him is his run blocking ability. I've watched multiple videos of him blowing up a defensive back in run blocking. Or in one of the plays, very specifically, his quarterback throws a pick and he chases the guy down 60 yards downfield, makes the tackle. I think when you look at a guy like that, you cannot question their effort. A lot of guys want to look at these young wide receivers and they see them on TikTok and they see them at the 7-on-7 camps and they just want to write them off as lazy, and I think that's a total injustice. I think it's embarrassing to just write guys off after watching some TikTok clips about them just because you think you know who they are. So I wanted to sit down and watch his film and study him. And man, to me, he is everything of one of the best wide receivers in that class. He's a great athlete. He can move. He's speedy and he's committed. Run blocking, that he carries his fakes out. That's the biggest thing of these young wide receivers that I see that they have trouble with in high school is when the play is not going to them, they want to take the play off, but not Naheem Burrows. He will blow you up even if the ball's not coming to you. And Connor Salmon, that's 3 for 3 right there with three great receivers. Now, I wouldn't be shocked if they go after one or two more. That would probably be a good spot, with us having a pretty big reset coming out of 2025 into 26. But how about Tyler Grisham? Going 3 for 3 on, their top three wide receivers this class. I mean, that's just a great improvement.
Yeah, you love to see it, and I'm just ready for this 26 class to get on campus because By the way it looks, they're definitely gonna be something special. And then with these three wide receivers coming in, you love to see those big time wide receivers committing to us and just padding that wide receiver U resume.
Yeah, definitely. We're excited for him.
No doubt about that. But now kind of wrapping up, as always, we like to give you the upcoming week schedule. So another big week of Clemson athletics, especially with softball and baseball. So on Tuesday night, softball will travel to Knoxville to Tennessee and take on the Lady Vols at 6 p.m. with that game being on ESPNU. And then right after, make sure you keep your TV on ESPNU because baseball will be coming up as they will take on the Georgia Bulldogs at 8 p.m. inside of Doug Kingsmore Stadium. So if you're unable to make it to the baseball game, just make sure you keep your TV on ESPNU starting at 6 p.m. with softball and then 8 p.m. with baseball. And then on Wednesday, lacrosse, they're in ACC tournament play now, and they'll face Duke at 2 p.m. And then baseball, their weekend series starts on Thursday again, so it's kind of be confusing again because I'm used to it starting on Friday. But they'll travel to Raleigh and play the NC State Wolfpack, and then softball, they'll also travel to Atlanta to face Georgia Tech. So another great week of Clemson athletics, and yeah, I'm just excited for it, and can't wait to give you the best news out there about it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. We're ready for it. Another big week. Definitely ready for it.
You love it. You love to do it, man. The last thing I kind of want to end with, so if we have any Braves fans out there, we actually, for those of you who may not know, we actually have a Braves site, and it's kind of Tiger View Media's sister site, if you want to call it. It's the same setup. It's the same great insight, but it's called Braves Chop Report. So make sure you go give it a look at. It's BravesChopReport.com for the website. And then also make sure you follow it on social media as well on Facebook, X, and Instagram, as we'd be giving you the best Braves content out there. So, yeah, just make sure you're supporting Tiger View Media and also Braves Chat Report if you're interested in a little bit of Braves news and insight as well. All right, Dawson. Well, it's been a busy episode, and we've got through everything. This might be our best episode yet, tell you the truth. I really like the coverage we gave on it, and just the insights and analysis about it. But just what are your final takeaways from this episode?
Man, just nothing. Just that was a really busy week for, across all sports. And people will always ask me, they say, well, football is not playing on right now. How can it be so busy? And they don't realize that, hey, look, there's a ton of other sports that we're having to work with. There's a ton of other sports to watch. You got softball, baseball, even I would say football never stops. It never stops. Even if you're in the off season, guess what? It's portal season and we're tracking where everybody's going. So I would just say, again, Tiger View Media, we cover it all. We're on everything. We've got our heads in every story. And I guarantee you we're going to be sitting at everyone's table, when it comes to recruits.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And another thing, I just want to shout out our listeners. I went back home this weekend, like I said, for a wedding, and I actually got a bunch of shout outs from people I knew, just saying good job on the podcast. So we appreciate our listeners, and we thank you for listening. But just make sure, I know we get a lot of viewers on YouTube, but also if you're happen to be in a bind and in the car or something, make sure you tune in the audio as well, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, wherever. But yeah, just it's been another great week. Another week has come and gone, and another week is on its way, and just another busy week. And me and Delson's ready for it, and just happy to be here along for the ride. All right, well, is there anything else you want to add, Dawson?
I don't accept Happy Easter and enjoy the rest of the time with your family.
Yeah, happy Easter to everybody. Well, that's it. That's been the fifth episode of the Tiger View Podcast. It's been Gavin and Dawson, so make sure you tune in this week with the coverage, and then also next Sunday is the sixth episode of the Tiger View Podcast will be coming out. So, as always, it's been Gavin and Dawson on the Tiger View Podcast. See you, everybody.